This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it, tune it, press it, snap it, work it, click it, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it.
Good afternoon. This is Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. My name is Mark and with me in the studio is Raina.
Howdy.
And also in the studio is Michael.
Good afternoon.
Pushing buttons and doing all the technical things.
Oh, and I'm excited about this one.
Also in the studio, we have a new special guest.
Yes. Who you might have heard of or heard from.
Johnny joins us this week. Hello, Johnny.
Hi. Jeez, I got sounds like I've got a lot to live up to now.
It's fine. We're all relaxed.
As long
here.
As you have low expectations, we'll be fine.
I think we've trained everyone to have low expectations on this show. So on the show today, we'll kick off with a roundup of the latest in tech news, including a follow-up on last week's discussion on disintermediation. Say that word 3 times really quickly.
Good
backwards.
Luck.
Of course, disintermediation specifically on the car hire industry. So we talked about the app Uber and their foray into Australian car hire industry. And we thought we'd pick up on it again.
And see what's happened in the last week.
We're delving into the gaming world with a new voice, of course. Johnny is joining us to talk about excavating E.T. and the issue of sexism in gaming. Later on, we'll be discussing the banking industry and how it's progressing forward, responding to the threat of card skimming. Some new security measures are being introduced to keep your ATM transactions safe. Now, Melbourne's much maligned public transport ticketing system, Mikey, looks to...
Everyone's favourite topic.
Yeah, I know, right? They've got some improvements, apparently, with some new gates being installed that will hopefully improve response times. And some social news this week, with Facebook enabling more anonymous interactions. And Skype introducing multi-person video conferencing.
Hang on a minute. That sounds familiar.
It does, because that's exactly what they used to pay for, or you used to pay for on Skype, and now it's free like, I don't know, a certain other little Google?
Little Google.
Maybe? Little Google?
A little Google.
Goodness me.
Now, as always, if you'd like to contact us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427-JOY949. You can email us.
onair@joy.org.au is how to do that.
And we are also on the Twitters.
All over the Twitters.
What's the Twitter name, Michael?
Technogaze, TechnoGaze.
Indeed. So do contact us because we like to hear from you. If you have anything to say while we discuss the issues that are occurring this week in tech, we'd love to hear from you.
The more feedback, the better.
Indeed. Now, that's right. We haven't actually introed this, but there was a bit of an issue with Internet Explorer discovered this week.
Just a wee one.
Just a small one that's been there for years and years and affects every version right up to 6, I think.
From 6 to 10 or 11, yeah.
Wow.
So Microsoft have released an out-of-band update, which is code for... Crap, we've got to do something about this, right?
That's right, because normally it's Patch Tuesday is the day that you expect your updates from Microsoft. And it's a regular sort of thing, but an out-of-band update obviously is one where they just can't wait.
And, of course, one of the other things, of course, Windows XP is affected by this. So if you're running Windows XP and maybe Internet Explorer version 6 back then, it's also affected by this bug. So they're still going to fix it in
Yeah, that. I was really surprised that Microsoft turned around and said, yep, even though XP is officially de-supported, we will issue a fix for it.
That's right. So I guess they realise that there are still plenty of people out there using it. But, I mean, it's like, no, we're not going to support you. No, you have to upgrade now. No, oh, actually, never mind. No, we'll just help you out. I mean, what's that supposed to say?
Now, what's the bug exactly? How did
It's a combination of IE and Flash.
Right.
So it doesn't affect things like Firefox or Chrome.
Yep.
Because different browser. But it's that combination. So as well as doing an IE fix, I think you should also go to the latest version of Flash.
Oh, another version of Flash.
13.00.602.
That is one of the most annoying update processes of my computer, and I'm not even on a Microsoft machine.
Well, if you're purely on iOS, you would not need Flash.
This is true.
Or Android.
Android has Flash, doesn't
no,
it?
No, de-supported Flash.
Ah, they've found the light, clearly.
Yes.
But we do digress, of course. So, the advice is to make sure that your computer, if you're running Internet Explorer, is up to date with the latest with the latest updates from Microsoft. So, start your updating engines.
Do it right now.
Now, we talked about it last week. There's an app called Uber, which is a car hire app. It allows you to very quickly jump onto your phone and look for cars in the area that might want to take you somewhere.
That's right. So the way that it was is that you would, or the way that it is still, is that you could get a VHA, like a hire car, like a black car. And it costs a little bit more and, you know, you pay through it through your credit card and stuff. But UberX, as they're now calling it this week, although it was Uber Low Cost for a few weeks before
that.
Which
was a bad marketing name, Uber Low Cost.
UberX. Uber Low Cost. UberX is a ride-sharing service in that you can do the same thing. So you can say, oh, who happens to be driving around, who can pick me up?
Yep.
And take me somewhere for a cheap amount of money.
Mm. And so it's literally like, it could be anyone, right?
Yeah, it could be anyone as long as you have a car with four doors and it's pretty new and your insurance is up to date and all that stuff. Like, they don't just let anyone do it.
Yeah, yep.
But with that said, that's still a pretty broad number of people who, you know, as long as you can keep your insurance up to date and your car's not too grody, then by all means, you know,
compared to being a taxi driver, it's a very low bar of entry, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the criticisms about the taxi industry that that people have is that becoming a taxi driver is a bit of a low barrier to entry as well. I mean, actually owning a taxi is different, but being a taxi driver, you know, a lot of people complain about that. So
now, of course, the taxi industry in Australia and even across the world is pretty well regulated, right? There are certain rules in order for you to be a hire car.
Yeah, so a hire car in the sense that we call it in Victoria is a bit different to a taxi.
Right.
But a taxi is, you know, there are only so many taxis. At the moment in Victoria, you know, you've got to have a license, you've got to be registered, you know, there's got to be rules about, you know.
You get that little card that sits on the dashboard and all that sort of
thing.
Yeah,
which may or may not have your actual face on it. I don't know if you've ever done this, but you should, especially if you're in the habit of sitting in the back seat where you can't quite see the driver's face.
Yep.
Always look at the driver's card.
Right.
Is my hot tip for anyone. But anyway, you've got your card, you've got your license, you've got certain rules about, you know, you're allowed to ask the driver to put the aircon on or turn the radio off. Or a lot of other things that are true in Victoria and, of course, regulated fares. UberX, maybe not so much.
Yeah, because the bar of entry for UberX was really just around having just comprehensive insurance. I presume that taxis would have an extra type of insurance that's not really your typical personal insurance.
Well,
right?
they've been regulated a certain way, and it's not just insurance. Like, there's a lot of other things. You know, they all have a number on them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And of course, as you know, in Victoria, you know, all our cabs have to be the same colour,
yes.
And they have to have, you know, the cab number in you know, a legislated wow. size and all that other stuff like that. So, yada yada. Now, in Sydney, of course, what's happened is that Uber was all like, hey guys, we're going to get amongst this ride-sharing thing.
Yep.
And the New South Wales government this week said, no, you don't.
Not and, so fast.
And Uber said, whatev, and launched anyway. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, so the New South Wales Transport Department has come out, according to the Public Passenger Transport Act, apparently.
That's right.
drivers under the service need to be properly accredited. And the Transport Minister has been sending mixed messages about this particular option from Uber.
Mm.
But yeah, this week sort of came out on the offense.
Yep.
But if the government or the Transport Department do take them to court, their drivers are liable to get a fine of up to $110,000 for contravening the Act.
Wow.
And what would be interesting is to know whether it would be the Uber driver or Uber themselves that would be fined.
Well, that's the thing. So in other markets where this has happened, now I don't know about Australia and I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on radio, but what's happened in other markets is that when drivers have got in trouble, Uber has said, oh, that's a shame, you're out on your own.
Lovely.
And it's been pretty bad problems. So there was a young girl that was hit and killed by a driver. There have been assaults against passengers by Uber drivers. Mm. And in a lot of those cases, Uber has said, not our drama. So you can see why governments feel that the...
There should be some regulation, obviously.
That's exactly right.
There's a reason why the regulations exist, perhaps.
Wonder what will happen by next week.
Well, we'll see. We'll
soon find out, I guess.
And in Victoria as well.
Now, you are listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. In a few moments, we're going to delve into the world of gaming. It's been a topic that we kind of gloss over in most cases, but this week we've got an extra special expert on the topic. Johnny, of course, is here to...
Yep, here to help you out.
Help us out in all the gaming news. We'll be back with that in a few moments.
All day, every day. Joy 94.9. On air and online at joy.org.au.
Yes, jump on to joy.org.au to see all the podcasts.
And everything else.
Pretty much every show that we have here on Joy is podcasted in one form or another.
And photos and news items and our sponsor directory and our community directory. There's so much great stuff on that site.
You can become a member as well.
You can.
Through the online membership form.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also do the listener survey if that's still open.
It sure is.
Hmm.
Well, then we encourage everybody to fill out the listener survey because we'd like to know how you listen to Joy.
And
I filled it in.
Feel free to give TechnoGaze top marks when you're filling out that particular section.
Type 10 out of 10 for TechnoGaze.
Now,
speaking of scoring, gaming.
Yeah, back in the early 80s. When Atari was a thing.
What?
Atari.
Atari.
Oh, my God.
Steven Spielberg was also a bit of a hit with the movie E.T. Having a big success back in the very early 80s, I guess.
Mm.
Now, Steven Spielberg himself asked a guy, Howard Scott Warshaw, to make a game that would ride the E.T. wave.
It failed.
It sunk.
Yes. It also made tech news this week with an excavation of landfill in New Mexico discovering millions of discarded copies of the 30-year-old game. Now, Johnny Lemon joins us this week. Johnny is a regular daytime presenter here at Joy. He is also a massive gamer. He currently has 4 games on the go, and also hated World of Warcraft, which in my books qualifies him perfectly for TechnoGaze.
So that was the intro. Okay, cool.
Welcome, Johnny.
Thank you. I told that to you in confidence.
I'm so glad you're here, because every time I want to talk to these guys about gaming, they're like, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, that's
SimCity. SimCity. Which is fine, but we can't do it every week.
Pac-Man,
yay.
Mario Kart.
I could talk about Mario Kart. I've seen some stuff, you guys. Anyway, Johnny. So,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, E.T. Was a game back in the 80s, right?
Yeah, it was a bit of a blunder. And so the story of how it goes is Atari bought the rights to E.T. because they wanted to ride off the coattails of the movie and release it during Christmas time. But because of the tight schedule, they gave this guy Howard Scott Warshaw exactly 5.5 weeks to develop the game, and so he basically gave it a go because Spielberg specifically asked for him to do it. And
I reckon if Spielberg asked me to do something in 5 weeks, I'd try.
Yeah, you'd give it a red hot go. So he said that he was happy with it, with the amount of time he was given. However, it's been renowned to be one of the worst video games ever created, and
of course many of us may never find out, or we would have never found out, because a lot of the cartridges that had the game on it mysteriously went missing.
You can still find a few, I think, because what actually happened was they released so many of them. Like, they released it at Christmas time. It sold 1.5 million copies, but they also had 3.4 million in reserve because they hadn't sold those yet.
Yep.
So, after the initial release, so many people had returned their copies because the game was so buggy and crap that they had to deal with the loss of that and the return policy as well. And that's actually what implemented return policies nowadays.
So,
they didn't actually have a specific one in place for video games until after E.T., and so, yeah, basically, E.T. sunk Atari. It was one of the big reasons why Atari went bankrupt. And the following year, they were at a net loss of $562 million, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Back in the 80s. That's,
yeah.
That's
a lot of money.
Massive, right?
Yeah. So, what they did was, with all the extra cartridges, they couldn't sell them because in the stores, they marked them down five times. The recommended retail price when it was first released was $59 US, and they marked it down five times to being less than a dollar, and it still wasn't selling. So, yeah, that's why they had to ship them all off to landfill. And then this nerdy guy is making a documentary about it and decided to go and dig them up.
That's right.
Why the hell not?
Now, this has been a legend for ages as well. It's like somewhere in the desert, you know, and you know, kids growing up now probably have heard about this or whatever and maybe don't mind, but it's like, you know, somewhere in the desert, there's a big pit and it's full of cartridges.
In New Mexico, no less, which is, you know,
where you bury alien artifacts.
Often turn up, yeah.
Mulder and Scully, that sort of thing.
It's like the holy grail of games.
If it was a good game, yes. The cursed game pit.
But sometimes things are so bad they get their own life.
That's right.
No.
Anyway, but it's finally happened. It's finally happened. So, and he's partnered with Microsoft to make this documentary. So, so we should probably get a chance to see it.
I would be actually interested in giving the game a go as well. Like, I was watching a few videos where people attempted to play the game, and they lasted typically about 5 minutes before they gave up in utter frustration. So,
this is back in the time when gaming, like nowadays, we rely on updates to be able to be sent to us over the internet.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Very readily.
You can even ship a game full of bugs knowing that you will be able to push updates out on
the
day
that it... Yeah, yep. Exactly. I mean, and it's quite often the case where, like, I mean, with my limited SimCity knowledge,
SimCity totally happened, didn't it? You had, like, a massive patch the first day you installed it.
Gigs and gigs of data has to be downloaded to keep it up to date. But with this ET game, like, it was a cartridge.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You physically got the cartridge, you inserted it into your Atari machine.
And that was it.
And that was it. That's all you had. There was no internet, there was nothing like that. And that sort of highlights the difference between the gaming industry today versus what...
It really does, yeah. There's been some great photos coming out of the dig up as well, and you know, a couple of photo shoots and obviously the video shoot. You know, most of the cartridges, you know, they're covered in a bit of dirt, you know, going to landfill, they kind of got a bit squashed in there because, you know, that's what you do with garbage that you're never expecting to dig up in 30 years time, etc. But there are a few of them that are shrink wrapped, so you might actually get your wish, Johnny, if you can find one.
Oh yay.
Yay.
But then I'll need an NES as well to play it.
Emulation, my friend.
Atari 2600.
Emulation? You need something, hardware device to plug this cartridge into.
No, well, I mean, if somebody else can get the data off the cartridge
and distribute it
for the benefit of...
I wonder what the integrity of the bits that are stored on these cartridges, like how well would it last over the course of 30 years?
Because it's burnt onto a chip, so I'd say it would be, you know, unless it's physically damaged, I'm sure it'd still be very good.
Well, it can happen. I mean, heat can damage them and stuff like that. But that's you know, everyone knows you can get this is obviously you say that about Nintendo, but you know, you can easily say the same about Atari. Oh, do you have a problem with your cartridge? Just pick it up and blow.
Yeah, the old fashioned blowing it trick to fix it, because there's the dirt or whatever and the dust would affect the way the game would play, so it would wind up coming all pixelated and stuff. You'd take it out, blow in it, and it fixes it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, if things are making contacts or whatever.
Get the sandpaper out to, you know, go over the contacts.
Oh, my goodness. Yep.
And the eraser often did the trick too.
Mm-hmm.
Now all you have to do is, like, get another update.
Yes.
That's right.
So that was, what, 30 years ago? What's happening today in gaming?
Super Smash Brothers.
Oh, yes. So Super Smash Brothers is coming out for the Wii U this year.
Normally, I'm pretty excited about Super Smash Brothers because it's such a great game to, you know, get a few mates around, have a few Coca-Colas or whatever, or even a couple of fizzy drinks, you know, a bit of red cordial or something like that, and then beat the absolute pizzle out of each other.
Right. So typically, they were developed by HAL Laboratories, which was a Nintendo exclusive studio, which also did the development for later Kirby games, which is very family friendly. But this time around, it's being given off to Team Ninja, who is infamous for the Dead or Alive games. And what they've actually done is they've given Samus Aran, one of the Nintendo iconic game characters, basically her regular model is she always wears a spacesuit, but there's also a different version of her called Zero Suit Samus, where she's out of the suit and she's a blonde chick and all that sort of stuff. And she looks relatively normal in the older games. But this time around, they've given her a bit of a revamp, and they've made her waist very tiny, her boobs quite pronounced.
Oh my goodness, you're joking.
And they've also given her some rocket-powered high-heel stilettos.
Team Ninja, I'm surprised.
Hmm.
No, it's look, I'm so not surprised. The look, she's had heels before, and stuff, but it's just really kind of, it makes me feel really uncomfortable.
Mm.
Right, and A lot of people talk about sexism in games and stuff like that. Oh, but she's sexy. She's not, you know, being sexually whatever. But it's very male gazy. It's.
I want equality in gaming characters. If the male characters can also put on these rocket stilettos, then we're fine, right? Like, is that what? No, wait. Actually, well, maybe the stilettos shouldn't exist in the first place.
This is the thing. Like, I mean, and I get what you're saying, but one of the things that often comes up in this conversation is, oh, but male characters are sexually objectified too. Look at this picture of, you know, such and such with his shirt off or whatever like that. But the difference there is, I mean, the rocket boots are not really an example of this. Would you like some? We'll see. But it's more that, you know, when people say, oh, but, you know, I want men to be objectified that as well. Like, it's fair. Like, why can't it be women?
Mm.
When men are objectified that way, it is a male sexual power fantasy. It is about them being powerful, and it's about them attracting the girls and stuff like that. It's not the same as being objectified.
Yes.
Right. I actually tend to find that the male characters, when they're... I mean, it's all a fantasy, right? So the...
Yeah, and it's not necessarily good. It's just...
Yeah. So the idea of the fantasy of the women is to make them particularly sexual, and but the majority...
Subordinately
of,
so.
Yeah, and the majority of gamers who are male and straight... when they play the male characters, they're I wouldn't consider them sexy. They're just like big muscle machines. Like they're
that's
the,
right, because it's a power trip
thing. Yeah,
it's a power thing, and it's that sort of thing. So when it does become sexual, it's in the sense of, you know, they're attractive in a way that dudes possibly feel like they need to be in order to pull the birds.
Yeah, so you know, it's who they want to be, and the female characters are who they want to be with.
That's right. Yeah.
Perhaps it also reinforces certain stereotypes. Yeah, not stereotypes, but inequalities in general society as well.
Well, exactly. It's a lot of the time when you have, like, fighting games are absolutely chronic for this. You know, you have these sorts of, you know, yeah, girls can whoop ass, but only if, you know, they're...
Jiggling.
Yeah, basically, yeah, that's basically it. And a lot of the time as well, you know, there'd be cutscenes or whatever. It's all like, you know, here's so-and-so, you know, sucking on a lollipop or whatever. Like, wow, come on.
If a male character was sucking on a lollipop, what would that mean?
I think they'd be played for comedic effect if it was a male character.
Yes, yeah, because boys can't do cutesy girl things without it being, you know, a little bit something to giggle at, which I think is a bit...
My problem with this in this case is that Zero Suit Samus is a character that's in a game full of other Nintendo iconic characters. So she's the only one that's actually really being sexualized. All the other ones are just like Kirby, Mario, you know, none of them are sexed
up. I'm trying to picture sexy Mario and I just nice plumber crack. But no, you're right, she is. And it's really disappointing because she was... And one of the earliest characters, like Metroid, right?
Mm.
The whole series is, you know, she's as powerful. Like, even at the very first game in that franchise, it's like, you know, here's this character in a suit and, oh, surprise at the end, it's a woman.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
What an amazing reveal that was for that time, right? And she's such a symbol of you know, positive depictions of female characters. And it's just the later we get, the more... You know, you see her getting out of a suit, maybe, you know, getting a little bit more top heavy and a little bit middle not heavy.
Yeah, it was, I think it started when the Metroid Prime games done by Retro were all sort of, it didn't matter who was inside the suit because you were just inside the suit and you were killing aliens and all that sort of stuff. But when it was handed off to Team Ninja for Metroid Other M, that's when they gave her a voice and they showed her off, like, they tried to put her out into a narrative story and give her a voice and make her a character outside the suit as well. And that's when things got a little bit too... They wanted to make her a woman, but they made her a little bit too feminine. And I think they tried to make her real, but she just wound up crying all the time and looking sexy other times.
you know, yeah, girls can really do that if, you know, but that's,
but
yeah,
that was
that's
one of
not,
the criticisms of the game when it came out was just like, I just want to play as Samus, yeah. Not Samus crying. She's a bounty hunter, not, you know, I don't, well, I can't say that. It's going to be rude.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's not, yeah.
We've actually just had a text from listener Matt, and the text says, sorry, the email says, Dead or Alive, Extreme Beach Volleyball. This stuff has happened for years and needs to stop. Even sports games do it. Where's the W League or WNBA? Good question.
Right.
Gee, yep. I can't remember ever playing a sports game with women.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. They should make a Socceroos like hockey game with women.
Socceroos hockey game.
Yeah.
Crossover appeal.
Oh my God, I just realised what I said. My bad.
No, that'd be great. I love this.
We talk sports here on Techno
Games. Totally. See, games I'm okay with, sports not so much.
Oh, bless. Now, it is 12:30 here on Techno Games on Joy 94.9. Mark, Rainer, Johnny and Michael with you today. We will be back with more in a few moments.
Joy.
Techno Gears here on Joy 94.9. We're talking about gaming here. We don't often talk about gaming, but we are today because Johnny is with us, and Johnny brings a bit of authority to the chat.
I play games.
I play a game, and that's...
I play lots of games, just not World of Warcraft.
I play games, and I'm finally glad that I can talk about it without boring you two to death.
I was going to say,
a game. Yeah, I can see your eyes glazing over, Michael.
Just games. Yeah. Games are good. Actually, when you find a good game, it's really good.
Oh, I tell you, speaking of good games...
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, one of my favourite franchises ever is Mass Effect. Right. And we have had some Mass Effect 4 news this week.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the developers was asked on Twitter how far into development they were with... Mass Effect 4, and he said they're neither early nor late, then they're somewhere around the middle, so it's actually definitely happening.
That sounds so vague.
I know, but it's news. We'll take whatever we can get when it comes to Mass Effect.
Oh my goodness. What's the poop?
So it's
the scoop. The everything.
The rumor is that it's not going to feature Commander Shepard, who was, of course, the protagonist of the first three games.
Yes, and without giving away the ending for anyone who still hasn't played it,
yep.
If you're one of the five or six people who was living under that rock, it would be pretty hard to keep Shepard in, I think.
Right.
But a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, so the general gist of the news was that basically the next Mass Effect game is going to be... Well, it's in the same universe, of course, but it's going to be happening separate to what the main trilogy storyline is. So in the main trilogy, they have this long arcing... If you don't know what Mass Effect is, it's this trilogy of games, which was on Xbox and then later ported over to PlayStation 3.
Mm-hmm. Couple hundred years in the future.
Yep, and it's a sci-fi spaceship opera kind of thing.
It's real good. Yeah. Maybe not
spaceship
even
spaceship soap opera.
There's a bit of soap opera, yeah. But definitely. it's this really lovely sort of, you know, epic sort of trilogy.
Starting to get interested in this.
Yeah,
good.
The big pull of this game was that the big pull was that you could create your own character. So you were in charge of you were always Commander Shepard, but you had control over what his or her face was. You could play as a male or mm-hmm. a female, and both options had voice acting.
And their background as well. So you could say, oh, is my Shepard a war hero? Is my Shepard a tragic, you know, survivor of a disaster? Like, lots and lots of different things.
And so throughout the game, you're presented with a bunch of opportunities to make choices of whether somebody survives or somebody dies, or, you know, if you want to save somebody, if you want to let them... You know, you could basically be, it was a good guy, which is a paragon, or a bad guy, which is a renegade. So you could potentially play as either one of those. And the choices that you make in the first game carried over into the second game, which carried over into the third game.
Yeah.
So it was essentially like a choose your own adventure, which carried across all three games.
Mm.
And the big controversy was that when you actually got to the end of the third game, they hyped it up to say that all your choices would matter, but you were essentially given a choice out of four options, which were all pretty much identical.
Yeah, which I wasn't really surprised about, to be honest. And I've had massive arguments with mates over this before, but it's like it was always going to be the same.
Yeah.
It was always going to be the same, and you could tell that it was always going to be the same. It's like, you know, yeah, my Shepard was, you know, a bit of a bum kicker and, you know, had a lovely romance with one of her crew members and stuff like that, which is such a hallmark of Bioware games. Stuff like that. But at the end of the day, there was always going to be an outcome that had to end the series.
Yeah, and there would be no way to tie everything an individual player had done up into one specific ending without making, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of different types of endings.
Yeah, which was a bit cheeky of BioWare when they said, oh, yeah, like massive, wildly different endings. And it's like, yeah, and the implementation was a bit poor as well. Like the actual, if you think about the implications, yes, great. The actual execution made us a bit sad. But, you know, Mass Effect 4...
is rebooting the series.
A bit, yeah. And it should be pretty interesting. So, you know, the whole mechanics and everything. It's going to be running on the Frostbite engine, Frostbite 3. So that's quite a recent and powerful bit of development. So that's what Battlefield 4 runs on at the moment. And that always looks really good.
So if it's rebooting the series, does that mean that there's going to be 4 to 7? Or 4 to 6,
oh,
I should say?
I hope
as
so.
The next trilogy reboot?
Hopefully. Don't think they've gone into that far of detail yet.
No.
Because we're not entirely sure what it's going to be, if it's going to be the same formula as the first three games or if they're going to deviate and do something completely new. So.
Yeah, make it a bit more actiony or a bit less, or I don't know. There's a bit of a rumour that it would be... that the rest of the series will be re-released on the Xbox One and the PS4 as well, which is pretty good. So they're obviously pretty invested in the franchise and expect it to carry on for some time.
So do you think it might be ready for this year's Christmas stockings?
I don't know. I don't
reckon. I doubt it.
You know what will be, though, or well before Christmas, is Dragon Age Inquisition, which is the third one of their other big franchise at the moment.
Yes.
Which I'm pretty excited about.
For those not to know, BioWare is typically... well-renowned for including same-sex relationships in games, specifically for Mass Effect and Dragon Age. So you're allowed to have
allowed.
A relationship. Well, yeah,
they permit you.
You're permitted to have a relationship with someone of the same sex if you want to. And that's why I first love these games. But Dragon Age is one of those... I kind of think of it as a bit less than Mass Effect.
Yeah, it's look,
I don't
it's
know
a
your
different.
Opinions on it.
It's a different game. It's a Western RPG for one thing, so it's a very particular sort of taste or sensibility. You know, I think a lot more people can get behind Mass Effect and the relatable characters and, you know, aspirations about the future as opposed to Dragon Age, which is in a different world. There are dragons, obviously, not many. You know, there's magic. There's, you know, all that sort of fantasy novel stuff.
Right. So there's been two games already, and the general consensus was that the first game was a bit of a hit, and the second game was a bit of a bust. So-
Yeah. It's the third one, I think a lot of the things that people said that were robust about it were, you know, simplified combat, which they didn't really love, lots of reuse of environments, which they didn't really love, but story-wise it was really powerful.
Mm.
So hopefully Inquisition will be a little bit stronger that way.
Yeah, I got to say, I completely lost interest in Dragon Age number 2 and just didn't even bother. So now that number 3 is coming out and the new art, new trailer has been shown,
that trailer
looks amazing.
Sick. It looks amazing. So you can go check that out on Bioware.com. There's loads and loads of new art. It looks pretty amazing, and it's also on the Frostbite engine, so it will look amazing when it comes out.
Right.
Yes.
That's our gaming bit. These guys over here going, oh god.
No, I think I love the particularly the same sex stuff. Like, I think it's every...
That was my first techno gaze with you, wasn't it? It was about the same-sex relationships in Mass Effect.
Yes, it was.
We even had a sample of Caden saying some stuff.
Yes.
Oh,
I wonder if I've got that... It was quite heartwarming, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You called it cheese.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. It did sound a bit sort of Mills and Boone, didn't it, I think?
Out of context, possibly.
Mm.
Less fun.
We do, I think we should keep this up, actually. I think there's a lot of stuff that happens in gaming, and, you know, when you hear gamers talk together, it's just really intriguing.
Okay.
Nothing else.
All right.
There is some other news that's come out about Tony Hawk, the infamous, well, not infamous, famous, you know, back in the day, the snowboarding game, not snowboarding, skateboarding games, which were started on PlayStation 1. And it's now moved because, it was quite popular for a while back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when skateboarding was actually a thing. And then now that's actually died out a bit. People stopped buying.
Some may disagree, but...
Yeah, well, I see people with skateboards. I'm like, man, that's so 90s.
I haven't moved on from grunge either.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the point is that it was quite popular back in the day, and then the sales just started to plummet. So they tried to reinvigorate the series by releasing a peripheral, which is basically... your own sort of skateboard that you stood on and used, and that was a complete total bust. So they released another game to try and take advantage of that, which only sold 3,000 copies worldwide. So they kind of given up after then. But now the new news is that Tony Hawk is actually moving to free-to-play on mobiles as exclusive.
Yeah, and you can see why they'd make a decision like that, because, of course, every man and their dog have a mobile phone now. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And a lot of the games that are really, really powerful and popular on that platform are things that you can sit down on the tram or the train or whatever and just, you know, like Temple Run and stuff like that, where you can just sort of, you know, smash out a few things.
It's the whole casual gaming versus hardcore gaming, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I, as a non-hardcore gamer, might be more inclined to pick up my phone and use this kind of game because it's, I've just got some spare time. I want to occupy my mind while I'm waiting for the train to take me somewhere.
Right. Yeah, so I think one of the things was the people that were playing the games tended to be more hardcore because it became quite a niche title.
Mm. Yep.
And now that it's moved to mobile, I think there's been a little bit of backlash about it's not the same, you know, you can't
casuals.
Do all the tricks. And I think this article that we have from IGN says that it's turned into a bit like a Temple Run kind of control settings where you, like, you flip it for two tricks and stuff. And yeah, I mean, but because of the sales plummeting so much, they're having to give it another go and do it on mobile without risking the bankruptcy because of releasing new peripheral or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard not to make money on mobile.
It's interesting that they're using this method actually to reinvigorate the title, in fact, that it's not just a way of turning a good game into a crappy game.
True, but like Johnny says, you know, if skateboarding has kind of died out, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people now who'll be looking at that game going, Tony who?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know. Mm. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in gaming news.
Ooh, and other things.
And other things. We'll be back with some more other things in a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
Joy.
TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. And we're talking about tech and the news. Now, this week has been a bit of news around ATMs and Eastern European crime rings getting their card skimmers onto ATMs, mainly in Sydney, but it's happened in Melbourne as well. It happens across Australia. It
happens all over the world.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of ATMs that have been adapted so that you can't fit these add-on skimmers to it, but obviously there are some vulnerable ones still left around in Australia.
Still around, and Commonwealth Bank have been particularly targeted in a few areas. But the Commonwealth Bank actually have a solution to this. Very well-timed, I might add, because of the news that's been in the mainstream media this week.
This is not a conspiracy theory, is it?
No, not at all. But both their Android and iOS apps will soon have the ability to make ATM skimming a thing of the past, where in fact you won't need to necessarily use your card to obtain money.
You will use your telephone.
Mm.
Mm, that's interesting.
So they're currently being ATMs are currently being upgraded to support a feature where you'll be able to withdraw up to $200 a day in a single transaction. Although once this is proven to work, they may in fact increase that limit.
So you just pretty much just have to take your phone towards the ATM.
Mm.
So is this a little bit like printing, where I think I'm going to print on one printer, except it comes out on the other side of the country? Does it mean my money's going to spit out on some ATM somewhere else?
Yeah, I'm just going to camp out in front of an ATM and see what happens. No, I think you actually have to be proximally close to it. Like,
The way I read it, and I think Westpac are also looking at a similar thing as well with their mobile phone apps.
Right.
But what it is, it's almost like a one-time use PIN. So you get onto your app, you log onto your banking as you would otherwise,
right.
And you say, I want to withdraw this money. Give
like
me
an RSA
PIN.
Token, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's some two-factor method to it as well. So you get a PIN that you have to type in, and you also might get a text.
But you'd punch in this one use number on the ATM maybe or something.
It sounds like that's
and then
that's
cash falls out.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. And
that
of course,
fantastic.
Because you're not putting in your PIN or your card, you can't be skimmed.
Yes.
Yeah, they can try, but the number won't be useful to them anymore.
Yeah, it's a one time.
It's pretty amazing. I get a little thingy about using ATMs. I've got to say, like, more often than not, I'd prefer to take money out as FPOS or something like that. Sometimes at a place where I can actually see. You know, the FPOS gear. Like, sometimes I'm just a little bit about some ATMs, especially in the city.
I think one of the problems with skimming particularly is around the magnetic strip, right? That's very readable by very easily obtainable hardware.
It is. Now, the reason why we're moving to chip and pin a lot of the time, I mean, ATMs can use the chips as well, but it's the actual mag stripe, like you said, is in use in a lot of ATMs, and it's one of the easiest things to copy. So as long as you have the mag stripe and you have the pin number, you can just sort of image that onto a card. The chip and pin thing is a little bit different in that it's actually a tiny computer that does a lot of work.
Yep. So in order for them to intercept that computer doing a lot of work, they would need to do a lot more hardware changes to the ATM, right?
Yeah, either that or they just need to get a bit smarter about how they scam you. So you might, for example, have a cloned card and say, oh, yeah, my chip's worn out, which happens, you know, like your chip gets, you know, coffee spilled on it or whatever it is. Your chip can wear out and you can go to, you know, a retailer and say, yeah, I'd like a packet of gum and $200 cash out, please. Oh, whoops, I have to swipe. Sorry, my card doesn't work. Whoopsie-doo. But it's using the card thing will make that even easier. But, I mean, the reason why chips like that go into cards is because it is such an easy thing to do, and cards are still a bit of a weak link if I have the card, right? And I happen to have the PIN number, then that's pretty easy.
In authentication or security terms, having something is considered, as in having something physical, is actually considered a reasonable security mechanism.
The principle of two-factor authentication is something that you have and something that you know. Mm. So a PIN number is something that you know. The card is something that you have. But your phone is something that you have.
Mm.
And you might have a PIN that you use to authenticate on the phone and everything, and then the ATM can communicate with your phone, like Bluetooth or whatever.
Yeah.
So you enter something that you know, and the bank gives you something that you have.
I think it's a good thing that they're looking at alternative ways. You know, it's been such an entrenched part of you know, ever since, I guess, the banking branch, you know, went out of fashion, and we didn't have to go to a teller to obtain money.
Right.
These ATMs have pretty much stayed the same ever since then. Like, there's not much...
Yeah, there's been a few things that change, but not so many of them. And there are apps and things like that. Like, that, there's that whole... So Commonwealth Bank are actually real innovators in this area. So they had that thing called Ka-ching, where you could actually just sort of give your buddy a little bump on the phone there and do that sort of stuff using near-field comms.
Yep.
So they're doing that sort of thing. They've got I think for their MasterCard product now, they've got like a MasterCard proxy thing, so you can just stick it on the back of your phone and PayWave or PayPass, whatever it is for
with your phone.
Master, with your phone, and a bunch of other stuff like that. Their online banking is pretty sweet. I know we sort of bagged them out last week about their lack of prowess in social media, but certainly a lot of their products are getting pretty exciting, and a lot of other banks are doing exciting things as well.
Mm. Now, also in the space of improvements...
Cards that you beep?
Yes. Mikey, of course, is a interesting topic for all Melbournians, isn't it?
We all feel very attached to our public transport, and everyone's got an opinion on Mikey.
Now, apart from it coming in over budget, of course, which is one of the big things about Mikey.
It didn't, did it?
Did $1.4 billion, I think.
But it was on time, surely.
No.
But it's fast, isn't it?
No. Have you ever got up to a Mikey machine, particularly when you're going through the gates at a station, and you touch your card, and then you start to walk through and you hesitate because the damn gates haven't actually opened yet?
I don't have that problem, but what I do have is I'll get on the tram and there'll be six people behind me and it'll be raining and I'll have my card on the reader going, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Or you know, more often I'm the person behind them going, come on, come on, come on.
Yeah.
People that touch off on trams. Oh, anyway.
I've used a Mikey-like device elsewhere, and as my card was moving towards the reader, it beeped and the gates opened.
I've used the Smart Rider in Perth? I've used the Perth one. It's amazing.
Now some
Green Card in Hobart. That's amazing.
Some say that the reason for its slowness is because of the way it's been designed here. They actually have to do a back-to-base transaction or a back-to-base communication ensure that you are who
paid
you
up.
Say you are all good to go in. So
and in fact, Mikey tells you how much your balance is. So obviously, it does go back to base and say, hey.
Well, in fact, the current machines do, but there's some new machines on the way, and they're going to install them in certain stations. I think Mitcham Station was one of them.
Bentley, and Springvale as well.
Oh, Springvale. All the new stations, right?
Yeah, so they're getting new gates.
And also Richmond Station.
Yes, well, that would make sense. So it's supposed to make it quicker because rather than actually checking for the balance and stuff, it's just going to get a little yay or nay response.
Yes.
So it'll go beep, beep, or rah, rah.
So much to
right.
Some people's dismay.
That'll be my dismay.
Well, you won't see then and there what your current balance is, right?
But they'll use intelligent beeps to tell you if you're running low.
But they do that now. I mean, yeah. I don't look at the screen. And this is the other thing. Well, maybe not intelligent beeps, but they show you via a light. So yeah. When you touch on, even if you don't have time to read the text, which you don't because it flashes up for about a second at my station, right, it either goes beep, beep, or it shows you a yellow light. Or it's got like a thing that says low balance, or it makes that little raspberry noise. And whatever it is.
The siren.
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but, you know, they do that now. So I guess that makes sense. It just drives me nuts because, you know, if Mikey was actually, you know, if he had a smart app or something like that, if he had a smart app or something like that that could tell you your balance that was actually on time and stuff like that, if you could top it up instantly and do all those sorts of things, then it wouldn't really matter. I'd be quite happy to not see my balance on the screen if that was up to date. But the thing is, you put money on your Mikey, you might not see that for 2 or 3 days if you do it online. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of slowness all round, isn't there?
It drives me nuts.
One of the things that I actually find really frustrating out in the suburbs, particularly the machines that you touch on with in suburban stations, they're often in an exposed location, so weather-wise, and quite often, particularly when it started raining recently, there's condensation on the inside of the screen. So very poorly designed.
Oh, so you can't even read what it says anyway.
Yeah. Which, you know, maybe just setting us up to be able to, you know, transition nicely to
the
new ones.
But so the new ones don't give you the balance, but are they faster?
Apparently they're... okay, so...
20% faster.
Figure. Yeah, 73 transactions per second, per minute they're apparently capable of.
How can you do that?
You know what they need to make faster is when you actually go to pay through the thing to top up your Mikey.
Mm. Oh.
When you use an ATM card at those Mikey machines, it takes like almost 2 minutes or something for it to actually process. No wonder
it's
like
ridiculous,
there's
isn't
huge
it?
Lines there. So frustrating.
Mm. I'm at a man station, so I find it quicker to go to the ATM that is down the road, get the cash, walk up to the cashier and go, can you do this for me?
Yeah,
it's like I walk to the station, I see my train's coming in like 5 minutes, and then I know I don't have any money in my Mikey. I'm like, oh, well, I might as well just get the next train because I'm not going to make it.
Yeah.
And we'll have to top up.
Another option is to start sort of planning ahead and thinking about, oh, I've just got off a train, my Mikey is low, I should go to the Mikey machine.
Don't you tell me what to do.
No, I'm, hey, well...
yeah, but if you're running late, it's a little bit hard to do.
It's
a
habitual thing, isn't it? It's sort of training your
Look, they've always pressed to get people to do, you know, they want you to buy the one that's, a whole year or whatever, or, you know, get
a
Mikey
pass. I do the auto top-up.
Yeah, the auto top-up's okay. The only problem with the auto top-up, again, is that it takes so long for money to get out of your account and actually arrive on your Mikey that by the time your Mikey is down to, say, $8, and it's like, ooh, time to top up, you've already spent that $8 in the next 2 days.
You just set it to top up automatically at the $300 mark.
Well, that might help.
Because it takes that long for the
money bags over here.
Now, is this the Mikey rant?
Oh.
It's as close as we can get to the Mikey rant because we are running out of time here on Techno Gaze.
Actually, that sounds like a song, the Mikey rant.
I'm sure we could all chorus in on that one. Every Melbournean has a thing to say about it.
Why not text in and tell us about it?
Now, this is 6 minutes to one here on Techno Gaze. We're running out of time, so we'll have to wrap up the show shortly. But we'll do that in a few moments.
Techno Gaze.
Joy 94.9, we're talking technology in the giblet world.
What?
Please explain.
GLBTI, what is it? No, hang on.
GLBTIQ?
Yes.
Rearranged as giblet. How many eyes are there?
It's an alphabet
quilt bag.
Soup, right?
Quilt bag is my favourite at the moment.
Speaking of alphabet soups, it's going to be a membership drive soon here on Joy 94.9. And it's an exciting time of year for Joy, because this is where we ask you to become a member.
Yes.
To continue your membership and...
join us.
To donate... to keep us on air as well, so
because we can't do it without you.
Not too far in the distant future. Not, wait, not too far. What
in the not too distant future?
Thank you.
Very there will soon. Be
upcoming, and there's going to be some amazing prizes. I can't wait.
Yes, I've heard little bits here and there. We're not allowed to say too much at this time.
No spoilers.
We should stay tuned to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are talking tech here on Techno Gaze, and should we talk about Facebook? They've introduced a new anonymous-y type thing where
Facebook caring for your privacy.
Finally.
Is that an oxymoron?
I think it is, actually. Now, the websites have been able to create user profiles using your Facebook credentials for quite some time now, but there's a new feature that they're enabling you to use your Facebook login but remain anonymous to the website still.
Right, but obviously not to Facebook, which is, I guess, what they care about.
But in Facebook, we trust.
Of course we do.
No, but I do like it because there are times when I have tried to use my Facebook sign on a different site and I am worried about what exactly they're going to get to see.
Mm. Yeah, and in fact, you can see them sort of revealing it sometimes. It's like, you know, you can actually see, oh, here are your friends who like such and such. Here are all your, you know, friends who commented on this website. So-and-so shared this stuff, whatever. Like, it's, you know, what aren't you seeing?
I'm just tired of them recommending I go on gay cruise in the ads, in the personalised ads.
Yes.
Yeah.
As in a boat cruise, or actually be a crew on a boat.
No, cruise. Like, on a boat, you go on a cruise.
Yeah. But imagine working on one of those boats.
I don't want to.
In any event.
But imagine it.
Okay.
Last but not least, Kitty-O. Have you heard of this amazing little device?
I think this is fantastic. Me, not being the cat lover, loves the ability to be able to play with your cats remotely and make them go crazy by getting them to shine this little laser dot on the floor that you can control remotely.
Remotely controlled laser light. What more could you want? I think it's amazing. Do a Google search. We haven't got time to talk about it too much, but, you know, cats love laser lights.
Kitty-O, K-I-T-T-Y-O.
Cat technology.
That's all we have time for today. If you missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by jumping onto our website, joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is the Nudie Foodie. With Cravings.
Some really special guests.
Yeah. Oh. MasterChef chefs, the judges, in fact, are going to be interviewed today. And, of course, Shannon Gillies is right up in a few moments with a Joy News Bulletin. Thank you for joining me today, Raina.
It's such a pleasure.
Johnny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'll hopefully be back again soon.
We hope you'll be back. It'd be great.
You can't get rid of me now.
Michael.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.